Just a quick review. This is rebuilding the temple after they were caught up with the Babylonians and all that whole mess after Jeremiah and everything. We're basically going towards the end of the Old Testament right now. As far as time goes, the only thing that comes after Ezra and Nehemiah and Esther will be Malachi. But we won't take it quite that way. It would have been fun to go through the Old Testament chronologically, for me. I wish I'd have seen that earlier and looked at it and kind of would have tried that. So we're going to do it today, though, just a little bit. But let's do a quick review here. I mean, they're rebuilding the temple. They wanted to rebuild the temple, and they got kind of delayed here. Look at chapter 4, just a quick review. Because I have to remind myself that this isn't just an Old Testament review. This is to find a way that is for us. I mean, what do we get out of this? What do we learn from the Old Testament? It's there for admonition. And there are a lot of the Paul guys that say we don't even have to read the Old Testament. We don't even have to read the Hebrews, James, Peter, and that sort of a thing, and the Gospels, just to know about Jesus a little bit. And that's wrong. I mean, that isn't what we're saying to people at all. We need to read Genesis to Revelation. That's why it's there. We just know what's to us. But it's all for us. So, what can we get out of Ezra? I just want to remind us in chapter 4, the practical stuff here. And then we'll look at what happened, and we'll still see some application for us there. But chapter 4 is where they come up with their adversaries. And here they want to build the temple, and they find out that the world out there finds out that in verse 1, it's called the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the children of the captivity built the temple unto the Lord God of Israel. They got pretty upset. And this is as practical for us as Nehemiah is. Because remember, we'll get into Nehemiah here in a week or so. As far as our enemy, people that don't want you to get your life a little cleaner. So we see in verse 2, we see that they did offer their help. I mean, they said, let us build with you, for we seek your God as ye do. Well, you know, really, if you think about it, these folks weren't seeking God. I mean, they had God. I mean, you know, they're seeking. The people right here, the enemies, they say that we seek your God. Well, Ezra had God, so there's kind of a different thing there. But anyway, they say they sacrificed unto him since the days of Esarhaddon and King of Assur, but they knew better. It says in verse 3, you have nothing to do with us. You have nothing to do with us. And I like that phrase. You have nothing to do with us. And we have people in our lives that they say they're Christians and this sort of a thing. And they say that they're seeking the truth and they're seeking God and God's way and everything. And they want you to come over and seek God with us. And we'll be glad to help you. We want to do it together. And you know already that the King James Bible is the issue that separates you and anybody else that's out there. And you're not being a jerk about it. You're not being obnoxious, I hope. And you're not being mean about it. But we have to remember that Ezra, here it says, Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the chief of the fathers said unto them, ye have nothing to do with us. So these guys knew that they had nothing to do with them. And they said, we will do fine. We will rebuild the temple fine. We don't need your help. Yes, friend and neighbors and fellow schoolers or whatever, we're doing fine. We really don't need your help. And we don't, you know, I just wish we could get a hold of that. And as we're going to talk about even in the service again today, separation part 4, I think we're up to. And I just wish we could get a hold of the fact that, you know, when the world offers their help, we really don't need their help. One of the issues, I suppose, is the church that gets money from the government or whatever. You know, if that faith-based stuff, why don't we get involved with faith-based ministries and call it that? Because the government would give us a lot of money. We could probably have the building redone and get money for programs and the whole thing, but we would have to do it according to their okay and their approval. And they say, well, we want to help this country. We want to help the world. Now, remember, what they did there is it says in verse 4, when they refused, they weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building. See, people want to help us. They really don't want to help us. They want us to go their way, just like these adversaries. And we don't want to do that. We really don't want to do that. We can finance our own place. If we can't finance it, we get rid of it. We don't need their help. Well, I don't need to go to their institutes, and you don't need to go to their institutes, and even college is questionable. Unless you want a specific career as such, or you got to have a piece of paper that says that you're brilliant, and really what it says is you've been taught the ways of the world, and I will pay you, and we'll let you get involved with us. But that's all it is. And the other point there is in verse 5, and I really do like this verse. I really do like this verse where it says, I hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose. And you just think about that phrase, their purpose. What is their purpose? Their purpose was to worship God. It was to build a temple. Their purpose was to obey what God told them to do. And what is our purpose? What is your purpose within your home? What is your purpose as a homeschooler? What is your purpose as a Christian? As a wife, as a husband? I mean, we're going to see that most modern Christianity is going to frustrate our purpose. Unless, of course, our purpose is to make money, our purpose is to get bigger, and our purpose is to have a lot of friends. If our purpose is to make sure our kids have a happy life, then you're going to let the world out there get involved, and they're going to mess you up. Ezra and these guys knew better, and they said, no, you can't help us. So without me saying it again, do you see that? I mean, do you see the importance of that thing? Can we learn from Ezra? We're not trying to be an Old Testament Christianity, but we can certainly learn from them that they didn't want to go outside their camp as such to get help. And I really don't believe we need to. I really don't believe that. But I know practicality, and I know what people are going to do. I know what kids want to do. They want to make money. They want to have a life. They probably didn't like our life as adults because we were so caught up in the Great Commission things or the Gospels, and we taught it in such a wrong manner that when we got excited about it, we got out to paddle, and we just did all sorts of things that we thought were doing right, and we really were doing Old Testament Christianity. And now we've kind of burned everybody, and they're just going to go out and do the world because they just don't like what we think Christianity is. But now that we're finding out the truth of Christianity through Paul and the joy of grace and this whole dispensational thing, but see, now we're finding out through Timothy and Titus there's still some things we're supposed to separate ourselves from. And, oh, do we even want to get into that sort of a thing? Let me just go out there and they'll help us. We just can't do that. We just can't do that. That's just not... And if we do, God isn't going to get us because it's His grace and His long-suffering and patience. So, and then we see in the same chapter, verse 6, that they got so down into this thing that they wrote false accusations. And then that false accusational writing came up on the scene later on in verse 17 when the king went to look for proof that when these guys said, listen, these guys, don't let them build their temple. I mean, they're going to come back and you're not going to get any money from them. They're going to take over the world and the whole thing. And then the king, such a Lazarus there somewhere in 17, 18, 19, 20, they did, was that chapter, that's right. Then they went and he looked and he found that writing that shows that they were bad people. So that letter, that accusation did come back and haunt them. It was a false accusation, but who cares? It still got him to stop the work. Down in verse 23, it says, made them to cease by force and power. At least they put up a squabble, apparently. Doesn't say much about it, but it does say, then ceased the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. So it ceased until the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia. So, well, I'll tell you, there's just an awful lot to learn from these first chapters. But whether we learn them, I guess, and there's a couple letters through this whole book. It's really kind of interesting. So let's go on to look at chapter 5. We're just going to chapter 5 here. Did you get that? I just so badly wish we could put some real practicality to what we're learning from these guys. That they went through a lot of horrible times to build their temple, and then they weren't allowed to build it. That must have been hard for them. You know, it doesn't talk about that, but just think about it. Here they are, God told them to build this temple, and the enemy comes along and says, we'll help you, and then they say, no, we don't want your help, and they manage to stop it. Don't you suppose there were some people in that group that said, hey, See, they asked for our help, and then we refused their help, and now look, we can't even build anything. Couldn't we have let them help us a little bit, and we'd have done this? I would have known that they're not true, and we'd have been careful with that sort of a thing. No, we wouldn't have. It's best not to do it than to have somebody wrong help you to do it wrong. I could just harp on that thing. I need to learn that, too. So Ezra chapter 5. Should I do that all over again? Ezra chapter 5, we see, then the prophets Haggai, the prophet, and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, promised unto the Jews that there were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of God of Israel, even unto them. Then rose up Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Jozadak, and began to build the house of God. Hey, we're getting back into it again. But here's where chronological stuff is really interesting to me. I've never done this. I've never noticed this. I've never taken the time to do it. But let's go to the book of Haggai, or Haggai, or whatever. I guess if we ever get done with this little series that we're going through here, we're up to 46 today, it would be an interesting way to go back and read. I guess I could do it personally, within the home or something. So could you. The Old Testament, in sort of chronological order. They can't do it exactly because there's transition and mixes and stuff. But if you go to the book of Haggai, which is only a two-pager or a two-chapter, we're still looking. That's before Zechariah. Letter H. We see how it starts off. In the second year of Darius the king, see, my memory is so bad that when I read Haggai, it doesn't click with me. Oh, let's go back to Ezra, because that's where all the second year of Darius stuff is taking place in this whole temple thing. I just read through it, and that's interesting, and wow, and mark some verses and all this kind of stuff. But now when I think about it, here we are. We're going through Ezra. We've been through Chronicles and stuff, and they've been through the whole Babylonian destruction thing and through Jeremiah and all that stuff. In order to get to that, we had to skip the Psalms and the Proverbs. And now we're getting where they're going to rebuild the temple, and we have skipped so much Bible now. As where we're at right now, chronologically, historically, we have skipped a ton of Bible. So now as we go through the rest of this Old Testament stuff, through these little prophet guys, we're going to see a lot of places. Wow, wish I'd have read that enough study time to put that back where it should have been when we were talking about it, and it would have just helped everything come together so much, you know. So here we are. We're skipping all that. We're going to where they're back home, and they're rebuilding their temple, and they're going to rebuild the wall with Jeremiah. But before we go to Nehemiah, we have to finish building the temple. And between Ezra and Nehemiah, we got all this stuff with Esther right there in the middle. So why is Esther after Nehemiah? Is Esther after Nehemiah? Yes. No, it's Nehemiah. I'm sorry, it's Nehemiah, then Esther. Esther should be between Ezra and Nehemiah. But it's not. Why? I don't know. It's just the way he watched this thing. That's the way he wrote it. So, and there's a bunch of other stuff. Why couldn't we have a Bible printed in chronological order? You can buy a Bible in chronological order. But it'd be hard to find things. Let's see, I need to find something. You know, where's Jeremiah? Well, it's not after Ezekiel or Isaiah. So where's Jeremiah? It's that kind of a thing. But if you want to invest in a chronological Bible, if you've got this, you know, you read your Bible, 90,000 times or so? It would be nice. I bet you'd be kind of interesting to read this whole thing chronologically. Knowing that it's not exact. In fact, even today, the example we're going to use, I think they put it in just a little snitch early in the chapter, but the point is made. So here we are, Haggai, in the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, saying. And then you look back at Ezra, and yeah, that's what's going on. Wow, this is pretty neat. This is like an inside story here, like a reporter going to show us a little bit more what's going on back in Ezra. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say, the time has not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Oh. So here we are back in Ezra. They're going to build a temple. They're excited. Wait a minute. Reading Haggai, they don't want to. They don't think it's the time. So Haggai's got to come along, and Zechariah, and he's got to get these folks excited to build the temple. Because it wasn't, I don't think this is the time to do that. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai. Again, they didn't have a Bible, so it had to be by these people. The prophet saying, "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste?" Preachers are always grumpy, aren't they? What do you want to stick around in your homes for? Our church or so, our temple is a disaster. "Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Ye have sown much, and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes." Now we preach this, consider your ways. We're all just busting our necks or whatever parts you want to bust, and we're trying to, and we cannot save the thing. We cannot just get ahead. We just cannot prepare. We just can't do this. This money we're making is just going out these holes, and you could preach this thing up a storm, which we tried to do a while ago. "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when he brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts? Because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house." Now, folks, here is your classic, we need money at the church. I mean, you go home to your beautiful homes, and you've got all this kind of stuff, and the doors, and the furniture, you know, and the windows, and you just go into this marvelous thing. And I'm telling you, we need to have a new building here, because people just don't want to come to an old-fashioned church building like we have. And you folks go home to your modern building that's got outlets every 10 inches and the whole thing. We need to get this temple right here fixed up so we have a whole lot better place. It's time. Consider your ways. You're wasting your money on your own self. And away we go, and people that are dumb out there think, hey, we better fix this temple. This is where God is at, and we better fix this place up and give it first-class stuff, because for God is always first-class. I've heard that 1,000 times. First-class for God. And just to put that money in, because this carpet is ugly. And look at the table. Marcy and Louie painted them, and look at how you treat them. And we need to paint the walls in the kitchen. And I tell you what, we need insulation out there. We need to have a new office back here. Preferably a log cabin office, because this is the Northwest, and we want to look proper here. And you folks go home to your beautiful homes. You know, what do? You know, this is what people are doing today. And the people sit there and go, yes, how much do you want? And they do that sort of a thing. It's just crazy what's going on out there. And the really frustrating thing is our kids grow up and they want that. We are so fortunate here. Most King James Bible kind of guys used to have church in a storefront thing or in a garage or something like that. Well, this is really a neat place. However, a lot of our guys now have 10, 11, 12 million dollar buildings that they're trying to pay for, so they don't dare bring up Paul and all the things that are in Timothy and Titus, you know, because it'll make all the ladies mad in the church, because we know that the ladies in these churches are the ones doing everything, and the guys are just out there shooting and hunting and having a great time with their toys. So we need money for these churches, and our guys are falling into that thing. And why am I so, I don't know, that's why I just got into that rave. I'm just done here ranting rave. I'll be done. Who's out there today? And who? Okay. Noah Cores, huh? He must have slept in. He's a lazy bum. He's a painter. He works hard. Anyway. But see, we're not Old Testament. And this whole thing about temple is an Old Testament thing. All these... It's okay to have a building. I'm not knocking the building thing, but $11 million? I mean, come on. Anyway, that's the end of where that one is. So, are you just jealous? No, we have a nice place here, and it's paid for. That's nice, huh, Lewis? I mean, this whole place is paid for. So what do you want money for? Me. That's why. Okay. "Therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit, and I call for a drought upon the land, and if you don't pay up, God's going to get you." That's just what people tell, pastors tell everybody. Verse 12, "Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord their God, and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord their God has sent him, and the people did fear before the Lord." Ah, there it is. fear before the Lord. Now, what's fear of the Lord? We've learned this. It's just to hate evil. Now, there are obviously places in the Bible where it's, yeah, be afraid because God will, he'll just take you out. Put you down and open up the earth, and your car will drive right down into that earth and the whole thing. And he's done that a lot of times. But we're to hate evil. Your God is to hate evil in that realm. Okay, so, 13. Then spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, in the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. Now that's interesting. Haggai is the Lord's messenger, because there are people today that call themselves the Lord's messenger, and they say that they're angels. I was reading that the other day, because the definition of an angel is a messenger. Well, so here's Haggai. I say, Haggai must have been an angel. See where they go today when they don't read their Bible? I mean, it's just crazy. So a lot of these churches are being led by angels. What do you think? What do you think, Sam? We know angels don't have wings, which is good. I'm your angel. It's just crazy. It's just crazy what's going on in Christianity today. Anyway, Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. Now, do we want to take a message out to people? We've learned from Paul that he doesn't use the word message. He uses the word words. We don't want to put out a message. We want to put out God's words. In those words is a message. But haven't you read a verse or two, and somebody else read a verse or two, and you both got two different messages out of that thing? And that's okay. That's how the Spirit of God works in us. But for us to just go out and take a message, that means we can quit making such a fuss about this King James thing and just get out there and tell everybody that God loves them. Let's go out there and give them the message. And that's what they're doing. Rick Warren and all of our guys are all starting to put out the same message. And we're supposed to put out, preach the word. So, here's where they get it. And what is this? This is Old Testament. You know, if we don't learn anything else from the Old Testament, the fact that it's Old Testament is enough to learn right there. Does that make sense? I mean, what's going on in the churches? If all we get out of the Old Testament reading, which I know you get more than that, but if all you got out of the Old Testament reading was the fact that what they're doing in churches today is still Old Testament designed, that's plenty to get, because most people don't see that. I need to change shirts because I'm just really hot with my work today. This is a hot thing here. Message. Yeah, that was all about a message. I got to get that in the notes here, the message aspect of it. It's amazing what I missed until I start yakking loudly. 14. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel. Isn't that interesting? Not the spirit of God, but the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people, and they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God. And then we go back to Israel and they build the place. And they got stirred up. And what was stirred in them? Their spirit. That's worth a study a little bit here. Compare that to us. Okay. So we go into chapter 2 now. Oh, let's see here. Okay, let's just, first one. In the seventh month, in the 1 20th day of the month, came the word of the Lord by the prophet Haggai, saying, Speak now to Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, the governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and to the residue residue. Went from remnant to the residue of the people. We're residue of Christianity. We're the last of the Mohicans. That's probably not the way to put it, is it? I guess. Who are the Mohicans? I know it's a tribe, but I mean, they just click like last of the Mohicans. Is that the Mohawk? Mohicans? Yeah, that's what I'm. Just on the shores of Gitche Gumee or something, and then had this flourishing, this moment of past of my literature years, and that's about all I got. Henry Wadsworth, because it has kind of a neat ring to it. Anyway, cut out the Longfellow stuff. Okay. Who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory? And how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? Don't you remember? There's a couple of verses for the old guys. I mean, half the crowd is thrilled, and the other half of the crowd is not happy about this name. And they're happy about it, but it isn't nothing like it was. It isn't anything like it was when we had our first temple. Remember that? Back there in Ezra? And here it is. Here's how God answers that thing. Verse 4. Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, saith the Lord, and be strong, O Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest, and be strong, all ye people of the land, saith the Lord, and work. For I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts, according to the word that I covenanted with you when ye came out of Egypt. So my spirit remaineth among you, fear ye not. Now listen here. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet once, it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens, and the earth, and the sea, and the dry land. I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come. And I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. So this place is really going to have some action here pretty soon. Now remember, these older folks are saying, this isn't anything like we had when we were there. And they have tears, and they're whining as loud as the people that are cheering as such here. And yet God said, I will fill this house with glory. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. The glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, saith the Lord of hosts. And in this place will I give peace, saith the Lord of hosts. Now do you see what's going on even in the Old Testament days? These guys thought, listen, this place isn't near as fancy as we used to have. And God says, and it probably wasn't. I mean, you know, it's obvious it probably wasn't. And yet God says, hey, when my glory comes into this place, this is what's important. You see that there? This is what's important. The glory of this latter house shall be greater than that of the former. And yet the former, according to their eyes, was a much better place. But when the Lord shows up and the glory of the Lord is there, that's the place to be. It has nothing to do with the building as such. So the same thing here. Let's say we had a little scrawny little building that had leaks. Well, we do have a big building that has leaks. But, you know, just say we had a real dump of a place. And I know a lot of King James guys, Paul guys, some Paul guys don't even have a building. And maybe someday we won't. But it doesn't matter. If God's there and the Bible's being preached and teached and all that stuff's exciting about Paul and our lives are changing, that's the glory of God. That's the glory of the Lord. That's what's important. And you got these places that are multi-million dollar King James Bible-believing churches to prove to the world that, see, we are just as good as you in your big buildings, and there's just nothing going on there. What do you mean there's nothing going on there? There's singing groups coming in. There's a packed house. I saw the lobby, a picture of the lobby last night from our old church back at First Bible. The lobby is huge, and it's packed full of people. Oh, it must be God's blessings. Why? Based on what? Gain is godliness to these people. And gain is not godliness. Gain can be a result of fruit growing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that doesn't prove a thing at all. And there's lies being taught at that place. Serious lies being taught at that former place, which has a huge building, huge lobby. And here we are, a building made in 1902, back when LD was in college. And we're having just a great time here. I hope we're having frustrations and difficulties, but that's what goes with truth. Okay. Do you follow me? Am I just 50,000 miles an hour here? I know I'm 50,000 miles an hour here, but you getting this, Doc? You see what's going on today? Kids. Are you getting this? That looks weird on the cam, but, you know. Derek, just a little bit. Just a little bit. Girls, you know. Remember, Monday morning. She's not going to say a thing to you. You're just going to do it all on your own. Okay. Now let's go here to, and you finish Haggai. Anything really cool in the rest of that thing? Yeah, he gets in there and talks about some things that's pretty interesting. I like verse 19. Is the seed yet in the barn? There's got to be a sermon to that question. There just has to be a sermon to that thing. I have to work on that one. Okay. He really puts it to it. Now, yeah, you guys get your act together and do right, that kind of a thing. Okay, now we go to Zechariah, next page. And 'cause Zechariah fits right into this whole thing here, too. But we got like a lot of chapters in Zechariah. And Zechariah really gets into the Lord himself. I mean, this is like prophecy stuff. This is quite interesting in Zechariah. And then what's left? Malachi, and then it's over. Well, this is exciting. Why didn't we just skip all these other books and get right and we saw the whole thing? Because there's a whole lot more to go. Let's go back to Ezra. We can't skip the rest of that stuff yet. But if you're really interested in this temple rebuilding stuff, and I don't blame you for not being interested, because I never was. So, yeah, but you're the pastor. Well, yeah, well, I just was. I read through it. I got my pages in. I read that stuff. And now they got a yak about it. I'm really finding this quite interesting. I must be all ready to die. Let's go to Ezra. Let's go back to Ezra chapter 5. We'll go back there. Where we saw Haggai and Zechariah come into the picture here. And now they were told they couldn't build it, so now they're going to get back and they're going to start building it again. And some folks will kind of get upset. If you look at verse 11 down to 17, you'll see a good summary of what's all been taking place up to this point. So that's a good thing to read. If you go to chapter 6, verse 3, we see the letter in detail and the decree. These kind of things. I mean, it's just like we're there. But look at Psalm 107. I was looking in that chronological chart thing, and it has Haggai Ezra chapters 1 through 5. Then it goes to Haggai and Zechariah. Then it also throws in Psalm 107 and Psalm 126. Oh, really? Well, we won't take the time to read Psalm 107, but I will encourage you to read Psalm 107 because it has to do with the fact that they really had some hard times. And yet how the Lord steps up to the plate. Now you got to remember where we are. These guys have been through captivity. I'm sure they haven't been treated very well. Nobody really likes to treat Jews all that well today. They really don't like to treat them well in those days. So they must have had some hard, hard days, and yet they're coming out of this thing. They're back building their temple again. That's pretty exciting when you think about it. They've been through captivity. They've been abused and used. Da-da-da-da. And now they're hearing from Haggai, the preacher guys, and Zerubbabel come along, and they say, listen, we're going to rebuild the temple. God said to us, you kind of don't want to do it, but I want you to do it. And God puts it to them, and then they start building away, having a great time. So Psalm 107 deals with that. And then Psalm 126, that one we can read, because it's a little bitty one. This just fits right where we are, and it fits with us, because we've... different folks have different problems and difficulties and challenges in life. And when you finally make some decisions and some choices and you see God working in your lives, finally, remember, it's not because God didn't want to, it's because we kind of keep him out. We can see where in chapter 126, we'll be able to see that in our own lives as well. When the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter, and our tongue was singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them. Now, here we go. I'll just yak again here. Verse 2. Here we got, let's put it today. Here we are, we're laughing, we're having a good time, we sing, and we love what's going on. The world's falling apart. But we got the smiles, and we're happy. Now, we're not rioting, we're not, reveling, because we're not to do that. We're not out of control. We're in total control. But we enjoy being a Christian. We enjoy life. We enjoy what's going on. They're putting more laws. Now they want to come and get the guns. Oh, isn't that horrible? And we smile and say, well, that's okay, because we know what's going on. We know what's coming. In fact, the news the last couple of days for Christians is just terrible. I can't remember what it was. Oh, come on. I'll try to find it before the service, but they're just coming down on Christianity, something fierce in this country. Hey, are we surprised? Not at all, we're not surprised. A little disappointed, but our mouth is filled with laughter. The Lord hath done great... see here, they said, among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them. Now, what's going on in our churches today is people are laughing and having fun. They're reveling. They're rioting as such. They're having a great time. But what are they doing? They're going to the world's music. They're going to the flesh. They're going to the ways of the world in the churches. And the people out in the world aren't saying, look at what God's done for them. they are saying we're all in the same thing together. You go to any church you want, we're having a great time. They're not seeing a separation. When he says here, then said they among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them, I see a separation there. The heathen, by the way, who are the heathen? That's us. We looked at those guys and we said, look, God is doing something with those people. They're not coming over to our ways. They're doing what God would have them do. They're separated as Jews, and God is taking care of them. And the heathen say, look what God's done for them. Now, today, God, they look at us and they say, look at your scrawny little old-fashioned building. Look at our building. Look at your music. Listen to our music. Look at the people jumping and screaming and yelling. Look at your people. They can hardly stand up in the pews. And they don't say, look what God has done for them. Because they're looking physically. They're looking for a kingdom of heaven kind of a thing, the earthly physical blessings. And that is what? Old Testament. What do we see today? The riches of understanding. It's a spiritual life that people need to see about today, not the physical life. So you find some people that if they have no money, they have no nothing, and they're some of the happiest people in the world because they understand Paul, they understand right and dividing, they understand the King James Bible, and they don't need a building like this. They'd like to have one, but they don't need one. And they should be able to have that joy from within. And why doesn't the world say, look what God has done for them? Well, if you've got that joy and that peace and all that marvelous spiritual understanding and you're starting to recognize some things and your lives are changing and yes, you do dress differently, ladies, and you're not whining about it, and guys, you do things differently in the leadership role and you're not complaining about it, there are still some people out there that will say, look what's happened to them. Boy, their lives have changed greatly. Yeah, but he lost his job. Well, yeah, but look at them. They're doing fine. Life is tough, but they're just doing marvelous. Look what God has done for them spiritually. Haven't got a good job, don't even have a job. Haven't got a guy, haven't got a life. And yet, you understand what the truth is with God. Marvelous, marvelous place to be. Marvelous place to be. You get it. Do you enjoy your Bible more than you ever have before? Honestly. When you read it, I mean, it's just like so many things are clicking. And look at the difficulties we're still having in life. That doesn't mean that everything is going to get hunky-dory all of a sudden. What about some of the dumb things we're still doing? And we're doing some things that are just going to burn. You know that. Some of it's going to be a royal flame. It's going to burn some royal. And you're going to really be disappointed. But you know what God says about that. If you'd like to make the change, go right ahead. I'll be there for you. But anyway. So that's all because of verse 2. Well, I just, kind of rambly-dambly here. Verse 3. The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. Turn again our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. Don't some of the folks here in our family here and even out there in the web world, I mean, there's some difficult times going on. I mean, there's some difficult, difficult, difficult times with their children, with schooling, with marriages, with health, and all sorts of stuff. And it says in verse 4, turn again our captivity. They were in a mess, and God's bringing them out of it. We can be in a mess today, and God can bring us out of it. Whether you do it physically, we know He's going to bring us out of it spiritually. Open up your Bible and get out of the doldrums you're in and get a joy about knowing the Lord, because He's not promising you a rose garden down here. He's promising us, we got the thorns down here. That'd be another sermon. Maybe we'll work on that one. But you know what I'm saying. God can turn our mess around. And if it doesn't turn the physical mess around, He can sure turn you around with your joy and peace. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. What did they do? Their life, their past was a disaster. They're in jail, they're in captivity. Now they're going to reap some joy. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, which is what they're doing. They're back to the rejoicing days, bringing his sheaves with him. Bringing in the sheaves. Bringing in the sheaves. That's where that's from. So we ought to have the same kind of joy because we had our temple rebuilt. Well, not physically, if you notice. You get saved, though, this becomes a temple of God. You would think he'd like to be in a better temple. Wouldn't you think so? A healthier temple, wouldn't you think, Lewis? I mean, listen, God, if this is where you're at, wouldn't you like to be in a better garage than this? He says, I'm all right. Because what did he say to Ezra and Haggai? He said, listen, you guys, it's not the building, it's the glory of the Lord that's in there. It's not the building. It's the glory of, it's God that's in there that we have to get our joy over. Because I'm realizing that if my joy is in my garage as such, I'm losing a lot of joy based on this garage. It's just not doing well. But what's in there is absolutely spectacularly marvelous. You young, beautiful folks, you'll have it happen to you too someday. And I remember how I used to think. I look back and I see my pictures as a kid or a young adult, young man. Oh, it's embarrassing to see what I was like. Because I know what I was thinking of myself in those pictures. I remember those days. Oh, somebody should have taken me up back and just wailed on me for the longest time. But they didn't. They let me learn it the hard way. 50 years later, I realized I really am a jerk, Sue. Taking me that long to realize that. But so are you all, so that's okay. We're in the same boat. But the glory of the Lord in there, it sure is marvelous. Because he's in there.